and welcome to another edition of the Not the Top 20 pod. Ali and George here talking all things EFL as always. George, back from a few weeks away and looking very well. But we're going to get straight into it because while George has been away, and thank you to all who listened to our two interview podcasts and the little mini pod last week as well. Thank you to all who send in your questions for our pods. But we're going to sort of take the initiative today because some fairly mind-boggling things have happened in the Football League since George has been away. Obviously, he has seen them all and has opinions on them all. But we're going to frame it as, what if I told you X? And we're going to start with, for me, the one that came probably most out of left field. George, what if I told you that the new manager of QPR, replacing Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink, the deposed Jimmy Floyd, is Ian Ollie Holloway?
I wouldn't have believed you, Ali. I still don't. Yeah, it's very, very strange, especially for a guy who, you know, during his old managerial career, obviously with great success at Blackpool, was always kind of a bit of an enigma, quite a funny figure. Since then, he's done in his media duties, he's come across as just a bit of an idiot. And I think he's kind of been exposed for that reason. So for him to get a job back at, you know, a club that's got serious ambitions to get back in the Premier League, club legend or not, is pretty shocking. His last job at Millwall, he was very, very bad. And he's kind of very much to blame for their, you know, their plight at the moment, still in League One and their relegation for the Championship. I think in his last six games at Millwall, five were losses, one was a draw. I think he only won two of his last 12.
Right.
This included losses, a 4-0 loss against Bradford, a 3-1 loss against Ipswich, you know, a heavy loss against Middlesbrough, Norwich, you know, these are all teams they're getting kind of really thrashed by. So I'm not entirely sure how he's managed to worm his way back into management, but...
Well, do you know, think it's something to do with director of football there? I think that's his title, or sort of overseer of all things football is Les Ferdinand.
Indeed, I think he seems to be a pretty... I wouldn't have much faith in him if I was a QPR fan. I mean,
why so?
There's a story about Les I remember reading a couple of years ago when he was assistant manager to Tim Sherwood, who we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
He was assistant to Tim Sherwood at Tottenham, and Moussa Dembélé apparently came out and said in a programme that he was very surprised once at training when Les Ferdinand came over to him and he said, you know Gareth Bale, he's just gone to Real Madrid, and Moussa goes, yeah. He goes, that could be you next, Moussa. And Dembélé's there thinking, I don't know if that's the greatest technique to try and like inspire me to play better. It's saying you're going to sell me off to a bigger team. I mean, he's probably not the sharpest tool. And also, you know, if he's director of football there, then he should have some kind of a map planned out for their progress. And appointing someone like Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink, who's a young manager in the infancy of his managerial career, he's done obviously good work at Burton. Fine if it's not working out, but then to chop it and change it so much and employ someone from such a kind of different angle just shows a real kind of lack of direction.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I would say that QPR in the last season or two have basically had to overhaul the whole squad, and that's for bad management reasons previously. And they've now ended up, as we know, with a team that is not particularly inspiring, really. A sort of, for me, very much a mid-table Championship team, if not a bit lower. And I do completely agree with you that it seems odd to go from Hasselbaink to Holloway, really sort of chalk and cheese, a young manager that seemed savvy with systems and philosophies to a man who seems, at least as far as I can tell, to be mostly a man manager and a motivator. But yeah. I want to stick up slightly for Holloway. I know that his recent record is not great, of course. I think generally he's been a good manager at Football League level, certainly in League One and League Two. Obviously, this is a little bit more than that. But I don't know. I find it hard to be too... although I was surprised, I think I'm going to try and see the positives in it. I've had the pleasure of meeting Ian, and he is a genuinely lovely, lovely bloke. He's had an amazingly tough time sort of in his family life. And I think he's clearly an incredibly hard worker and someone that shows a lot of passion. Whether that's what's needed nowadays for a manager at this level remains to be seen. But there's certainly a group of players, a lot of young players that could do with someone to sort of really galvanise them. And yeah, I mean, what do you expect it to be maybe bad enough to see them drop all the way down.
No, I don't think so. And the one thing that I will say, which could suit QPR, is that, you know, the success he had with Blackpool is playing a brand of football which was kind of lauded at the time, where it was, well, if you're going to score three goals, we'll try and score four.
Yeah.
And there are attacking players in this QPR team. I mean, Jaron Cherry is obviously the main kind of attacking force. But there are players there. And, you know, Connor Washington's had a very tough time since he's been there, hasn't really kicked in. He's another player you could kind of see Holloway getting the best out of. So maybe that's going to suit them, having that kind of throwing caution to the wind. But at the same time, QPR are a big club. They've got serious money behind them. I'm very confident that there are far more capable managers to you know, have a tilt at getting towards the playoffs this season.
Yeah, well, another team with a lot of money behind them and with pretty lofty ambitions is Wolverhampton Wanderers. Now, George, what if I told you before you went away that the new head coach at Wolves, replacing Walter Zenger, the deposed Walter Zenger, is Paul Lambert, new head coach at Wolves? We must be careful that we don't say manager. Obviously, it's hard to manage Jorge Mendes letting him have any say in recruitment. So head coach he is. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Well, I think the surprise here is how sensible a choice it is. definitely thumbs up from me. And all the other surprise is probably that he took the job anyway. I mean, this is a guy who left Blackburn, having done a very good job there last season, you know, shoring them up, keeping them safe, and turning them into kind of a tough-to-beat unit. And he left because of the kind of the owners there weren't really on the same wavelength as him, wouldn't really let him kind of manage in the way he wanted to. And he's gone to a club now where you'd expect the same to happen. He's a very capable coach. He's not going to be the coach, but he gets the best out of the exciting attacking players they've got, which is a bit of a shame. But they're solid at the back, and he'll likely, you know, continue that vein.
Almost really the opposite of Holloway, in the sense that you don't imagine that as a player you get hugely motivated necessarily by Lambert, or sort of whipped up into a frenzy to play above yourself, but what you will be is very well drilled, probably.
But that could also be a sign of the teams he's managed and the tasks he's been given.
That's true.
I think you forget at Norwich, or maybe you don't forget, but I think one may forget at Norwich that he now, they blitzed the Championship when he came in there, and he got the job on the back of a 7-1 win for when he was Colchester manager, which is a pretty astounding result if you think about it, on the opening day of the season. And yeah, they had a great great year there, and then the jobs he's had afterwards, it's called for, you know, an element of stability, and keeping Norwich in the Premiership was one of them. The Villa job was a strange one, where he did well, I think, for the first year and a half or so, and then it kind of unravelled slowly as the club did itself.
Yeah.
And his departure certainly didn't do the club any favours, as many would have thought it would have done.
I think it's a really big job for him, this. I think it's a not necessarily make or break, but it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. If you look at, as you say, that time at Colchester and Norwich, when he was really on a real sort of upwards trajectory as a manager, and essentially since he left Norwich, having kept them up in the Premier League and joined Villa, it's almost gone the other way, really. So I slightly fear that the slightly unusual situation at Wolves with the sporting director, I think it's Kevin Thelwell, with the new ownership and the looming shadow of Jorge Mendes, Jorge Mendes, could be very interesting. And I just worry that if it goes really, really wrong, that Lambert is just sort of sliding downwards, which would seem a
possibly,
shame.
But I do think he left Blackburn.
Sorry, just keep going.
He left Blackburn with his stock higher than it was before he went there, I would say.
Yes.
And with his head held high, and it's easy to look at that kind of short spell and think of it as being a disaster or a failure, but I don't think it was.
Well, he's got a real what's the word? An army of attacking talent. Emphasis on the word talent, because it's not necessarily come to fruition so far.
No,
but we've seen,
yet,
as we have spoken about, flashes from a lot of their summer signings, but absolutely no consistent performances at all. So Lambert's first job really will be to try and harness Cavallero and Costa and Teixeira, etc. So we'll wait and see how he does there. Now, just dropping down one level, because this one probably equaled Ian Holloway for shock factor, I guess. Although once you look into it, perhaps it shouldn't necessarily be a surprise. Swindon Town called an emergency or a big high-profile press conference and everyone thought that we were about to witness the unveiling of Red Bull Swindon, which would have been a hell of a topic to talk about on the pod. Instead, we've got Tim Sherwood, Swindon Town Director of Football. Now, since then, they had a very, very impressive win on the weekend, and the opposite of that last night against Eastleigh in the Cup, an embarrassment, a humiliation at home against a National League team. What's your initial thoughts on Tim Sherwood as Swindon Town Director of Football, and what do you understand by that title and his appointment?
I mean, to me, it just seems like a bit of a shambles. Firstly, I don't really understand what the point is of him being Director of Football and not being manager. Luke Williams, their manager, is basically, as far as I can see, been given the sack, but has been asked to kind of stick around in a almost like a figurehead capacity.
But yeah. I mean, he was head coach before, and all the things that we already knew before this Sherwood shenanigans, everything we knew about Luke Williams was that he's a fantastic young coach and he loves the coaching side of things and maybe isn't particularly keen on the rest of it. Maybe. So in a way, I sort of look at this as a very specific case. I also think that Sherwood's taken on the title because you know, he won't get the stats from it. If it all goes wrong, yeah, it won't go down on his record.
Yeah, and that probably has something to do with it. You know, I think Sherwood would obviously see this job as being slightly very below his station. This is a bloke who I think thinks he should be in the running for the England job. But if you look at the footage yesterday of the Eastleigh game, and when Sherwood comes down to the dugout from the stands and starts giving team talks and stuff, and you see Williams sitting on the bench, it's pretty clear that he's not very happy. They don't sit anywhere near each other. They don't talk. I'd be very surprised if Williams is there for much longer. Great result for Eastleigh though, and which is a club with a huge Oxford connection. So yes. I think there's quite a lot of people. The owner, Stuart Donald, is actually an investor in Oxford as well, which he's allowed to do because they're a non-league club. And you've got James Constable, who has had a frosty history with Swindon anyway in the past.
Yeah, yeah. There's
Ryan Clark.
There's a lot of links there. I don't know, going back to Sherwood, I think that it's an odd one. He is, as we know now, essentially the manager. He said in his press conference he's there to pick the team, to make the transfers, to make decisions like that. And I really, really want to sort of mock this appointment and be quite anti it. And I think I am, really, especially as you say, it puts Luke Williams in a very odd position. But I think one of the reasons why it does is that we have a very linear idea of how a football club is, you know, with a manager who does, you know, the coaching, the picking the team and the transfers, etc. And actually, and also our previous experiences of directors of football haven't really been like this. But at the same time, Luke Williams is head coach. If the structure is he is the day-to-day trainer, improving the players on the training field, and that's his job. You know, what? Let's say we change his title to first team coach, then we've got Sherwood doing the rest, doing the overview of the footballing things. It's very unusual,
absolutely,
and I don't imagine it will work. But I think that's kind of the idea, or at least that's what.
Yeah, I think to work, they have to be working in tandem.
Yeah,
and it doesn't look like they're going to be. Right. But the other thing about Sherwood is that, he, you know, his record in the past, his start at Swindon's kind of very apt in that he's had a 3-0 great win and then a 3-1 loss. That's the way it's going to go.
Mm.
You'd guess. I can't imagine he's going to turn them into anything half decent. I must say I'm very relieved that they're not Red Bull Swindon Town. When that rumour was doing the rounds, I was trying to wrap my head around them being the Premier League in a few years' time, which I wouldn't have enjoyed too much. But
well, they still have plenty of talent, which we saw on Saturday. It was a very impressive performance from them. And, you know, I guess, I don't know why I'm trying to make this sound better than it is, but I guess just for devil's advocate, you know, one thing that Sherwood can say with some certainty and not get laughed at is that he has a track record of sorts for giving young players a chance, for galvanising, I guess, young players at Spurs, and then specifically with Grealish for a while anyway at Aston Villa. And that's basically all he's got at Swindon.
Yeah, yeah.
Their oldest player is 26, so they are all essentially young players. And I'm going to wait a tiny bit longer to see how it pans out. I fully agree with you that it should be an odd thing for Luke Williams. But, you know, just for a moment, I'm going to wait and see whether it definitely is. Because, I mean, obviously, he said in his interview, I'm thrilled to be working with Tim. I'm very happy with the situation. Of course, he, you know, you can be cynical and say he's a man with a job that he'd like to keep, and that's why he'll say it. But let's see how it pans out, because, you know, there's a small chance that it could work very, very well.
Yeah, no, indeed. Indeed.
This is pretty astonishing to me, and something that I just saw this afternoon from the Sack Race, which is a website that we like a lot for all things manager related. The favourite, current favourite for the MK Dons job. You might remember that they parted company with Carl Robinson almost 3 weeks ago, and apparently, according to the chairman anyway, last week, still hadn't interviewed anyone yet. Well, the current favourite is Frank Lampard Jr., fresh off the boat from America, having sort of ended his MLS career with NYCFC. I can't really get my head around this. Have you got any thoughts about that?
I think there's probably more chance of Frank Lampard Senior getting the job. this will be no more, I'm sure, than a PR stunt from a bookmaker.
Yeah.
Very happy to be in the headlines and to be mentioned in a few tweets about this story.
I wonder what's going on with the MK Dons job. He said he had some quite strange quotes, Winkelmann, where he essentially said the reason we haven't interviewed someone is because I don't want to do four interviews with four different people. And then essentially, I think it was kind of like let three of them down by not appointing them. He basically said, when I interview someone, I want it to be the person that I'm going to appoint. I want them to have the job by the end of the interview. But that's not really an interview, is it?
I mean,
how do you choose that?
That distinct of someone who's used to being very loyal to their manager. You know, they've had the same manager for so long. It's not a position they're normally in. I'm sure he wants to make sure the appointment is the right one, and they'll have another man, the same guy, as again for another 7 or 8 years.
In their short history, they gave a job, Di Matteo. They gave him his first managerial job. They obviously gave Ince a job. They gave Robinson the job when he was 29. So
yeah.
They're certainly they have history of left field appointments. So perhaps it's maybe we'll be eating our words. Probably not, but maybe. Also in League One, we had a managerial departure, and there's just an awful lot of bitterness generally around this and around the club. Russell Slade, he's gone from Charlton Athletic. They were the team beaten by Swindon, and it was a terribly poor performance. Slade said as much in his post-match interview. And as we know, the owner of this club has a very specific way of dealing with poor results on the pitch. And that's to sack, I think, his sixth or seventh manager in the last, 2 years or so.
And the bloke being linked with the job is a Irish coach who last worked in Belgium, shock.
Yeah.
With no experience in coaching in England at all.
There's not a huge amount to add, really. I think it's already been said, and it's slowly, I think the Charlton fans have been trying to get it picked up, really, by the national press for a year or more now, really. Slowly, it's being recognised by the likes of Stan Collymore, Ollie Kay of the Times, and people starting to sort of speak out and say, actually, this is a club that's being run very, very poorly without the best interests of fans at heart.
I'd just love to sit down with Deschelet and ask him what the hell's going on. Like, just ask him what. You know, people have to be, accountable for these situations. And this is something I'm going to talk about on another subject later on. But it just seems incredible that this is happening to, in the public eye. They're fitting proper tests when people buy football clubs. Why aren't they held accountable now? It seems incredible to me that it can be run so ineptly and with almost such spite, and nothing can be done about it.
Yeah, well, we feel for the Charlton fans, of course. Not that our sympathy will help them in any way, but we'll certainly be keeping an eye on who they appoint and on what happens there. Obviously, on the pitch, Harry Jameson, who we spoke to 2 weeks ago, as a performance analyst for a League One club who's watched a lot of all of those teams, basically said that with the players they have, Charlton should really be first or second or third in the division, just with raw talent. So that's there if there's someone to put it together. But unfortunately, the shadow over the club means that it's seemingly impossible for that to happen. We'll see. We'll see if Du Châtelet's mouthpiece is appointed or if it's someone else. Carl Robinson has been mooted for that job as well. And another controversial figure in Football League in its recent history is Steve Evans. And he is back in management. He's back in management with Mansfield Town of League Two. Did that surprise you that he's in League Two?
Surprised me he dropped down to League Two. His record there is absolutely brilliant.
Mm.
Both with Rotherham and Crawley, he did superb jobs. Completely revolutionised the fortunes of the clubs. Rotherham's still riding that wave now, even now a few years later. Yeah, it's a great. If I was a Mansfield fan, I wouldn't be too happy with the bloke. You know, he's a pretty divisive figure.
Yeah, that's exactly it, isn't it? You have to look at two sides. I think one side is this is a man who is a convicted tax evader. He's a man who served a 20-month ban from football. What other examples of that are there? He was banned for 20 months for essentially cooking the books when manager of Boston United, being part of a scheme where they would pay players, let's say, there was one example of paying a player 620 quid a week and giving him a £16,000 signing on bonus, but essentially writing up bogus contracts to show to the authorities and to show to those in charge of sort of football finances, essentially cooking the books and allowing Boston United to rise through the leagues, but not in a straight way. But so you've got to look at that on the one side.
Of course, but in fairness, that, you know, since his 20-month ban, that's when his career has really kicked on. He did a decent job at Leeds last season in the Championship, a huge club. He didn't do a great job, but in pretty difficult circumstances, he did pretty well.
That's the thing, isn't it? The other side of it, let's take it from Crawley. Crawley cantered the conference, won that by a mile. First season in League Two, they were, I think, in the automatic promotion places when he left in April. And he left essentially saying, I can take Crawley to League One, but I don't think I can take them any further, which will have raised some eyebrows, obviously, as they ended up being promoted. The team he took over, Rotherham, were 10th in League Two. Obviously didn't get promoted that season, but he said when he took over Rotherham, stick with me, Rotherham fans, I can take you to the Championship. Of course, he then won back-to-back promotions, one automatic and one through the playoffs, and kept Rotherham up in his first season in the Championship. So his managerial record is absurdly good.
Definitely. I mean, I'd say the one difference with this job compared to the Rotherham job and the Crawley job is that he was really heavily financially backed in both of those roles. It may be weird now because Crawley obviously aren't necessarily one of the heavy punching teams financially in the league, but back then they definitely were. They spent like £800,000 on Tyrone Barnett.
Yeah.
when he was there, and he was given license. He stockpiled strikers massively. I mean, at Rotherham, I think when Rotherham went up to the Championship, they had about 10 strikers in their books.
Yeah. Now they've got one.
Now they've got
actually,
one.
Actually, no, sorry, Peter Olin and Wingy joined. Now they've got two.
And I don't think, you know, Mansfield aren't necessarily, I mean, they're not in a bad spot financially. They've got an owner who's got a few quid, but it's going to be very, very different. He's not going to be able to buy the cream of the crop in League Two. He's not going to be able to stockpile strikers the way he has in the past.
The options are Matt Green, who we know because when you see on the video printer that Mansfield have scored, it's Matt Green probably 50% of the time.
Yeah.
And your old pal, Pat Hoban.
Pat Hobes, yeah.
Who is allergic to the goal.
They're similar sizes, Pat and Pat and Evans. it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. I think he'll be a success. I can't imagine he's going to have the same impact at Mansfield. I don't think they'll be a championship team in a couple of years. But it wouldn't surprise me if they were kind of battling at the right end of the table.
Well, you wouldn't be shocked, and it certainly, you probably wouldn't even begrudge him having just managed in the Championship. You wouldn't be shocked if he's, you know, not using the club, but certainly, trying to make his way back up to a permanent slot at the Championship. Yeah. And if he does a very good job at Mansfield, then there will certainly be teams coming calling for him. Lastly, I think just something for everyone to watch out for. I noticed, and my mate at work, that literally every single time he was asked anything when he was Leeds manager, he would call them Leeds United in full every single time. Never Leeds, not once. Leeds United, Leeds United. And I've noticed already from today's interview that Mansfield Town.
So Mansfield Town.
I reckon it's a sort of, he's probably been told by some psychologist that this is a clever way of getting fans on your side. And it probably is, treating the club with respect. Mansfield Town,
that,
Steve Evans.
That and wearing sombreros.
That and wearing sombreros, where he starts this weekend against Crawley, obviously, the team that he left, but the team that he took up essentially twice, really, although he didn't quite see it through in that second season. And we will review how his start to life as Mansfield manager next week on next week's pod. But now we will move away from these crazy appointments, interesting happenings in the EFL, and we'll touch on any other business that we have.
with no championship action to get our teeth stuck into, we're going to move straight on to League One, where there's not much, really much change at the top at all. Scunthorpe, Bradford, Sheffield United and Bolton are still a big four up there. Sheffield United are absolutely flying at the moment, having scored 15 goals in the last six games. Bolton did actually lose some ground, losing to Peterborough, who are now fifth in the league, having picked up a few points recently. And after the game, McCann bigged up young Leo da Silva Lopez. And Ali, I know you've had a bit of an in-depth look at the youngster.
Yes, very excitingly. We're going to start, you know, really, we always research everything we talk about, obviously, and we're very proud of that. But going above and beyond, I thought what would be nice is to do a little bit of scouting, because obviously, you know, if you're a supporter of a League One or League Two team and you don't go to, well, you obviously can't watch every game. You can watch all of your team's games, but you can't see everything. And so you constantly hear these names bandied about and you might think to yourself, well, what are they all about? And it's very hard to do any sort of scouting. But luckily we have friends at Instat, which is a scouting tool. It's used by a lot of clubs basically because it's just got this huge video database, clips and matches of all teams. Literally name a team and it will have clips from all of its matches, all of its players, individual clips, individual categories within the game. And so you're really able, if you can't make it to all the matches, to get a good idea of things. And I spent a bit of time watching Leo da Silva Lopez this week, a pretty extended period of time basically, watching matches upon matches worth of his involvement. He's obviously played a really good amount of football this season for a guy who's just 17 years old. He's being bigged up at every opportunity by Peterborough, by Grant McCann, by the chairman, Darren McAntony, who I'm sure sees pound signs when he sees Leo da Silva Lopez. So I thought, well, you know, because I did watch the game and he didn't necessarily stand out as the game's dominant player. So I thought, well, let's have a quick look, see what we can see using Instat's in-depth scouting. And essentially what I saw was a player that is a very talented, very young player. And you can see both sides of that instantly, basically. He's a midfielder that really plays all the way across. He's often out left, he was out wide, out right even, a little bit against Bolton, but I'm sure he would consider himself a central player, so it's sort of versatile, very confident on the ball. He's got great feet, making it very hard to dispossess him, even under pressure, showed sort of decent dribbling ability, and he's very small, so his low centre of gravity obviously helps with that, really sort of wriggling dribbling motion. Passing wise, it was mostly simple passes for him, to be honest, out to the fullbacks or sideways. There were a couple of passes from the games that I saw that he tried a little bit too much on and with not much success. He doesn't exactly look like a sort of Cesc Fabregas-esque player, but certainly a really tidy player, and again just 17, so we've got to remember that. Obviously being that age comes with some obvious and natural downsides. He's not particularly strong on account of his size, and he seems quite naive in the tackle. There were a lot of occasions I saw him diving in, sort of swiping to try and win the ball rather than just jockeying his man, holding position. And I think that both of those negatives can be put down to his age, and not something that worries me. I like his combativeness, if that's a word, a very sort of tenacious player, and so, you know, maybe that's part of the way that he's always trying to win the ball. But I think that can be sort of coached and harnessed to become more of a skill than a weakness. So he does show some timing in the tackle when he stays on his feet, and I'd like to see that a bit more. So yeah, I mean, generally, Leo da Silva Lopez, I would say believe the hype. To an extent, he's got a lot of work to do.
He's very young for a player of that position. Yeah, I don't know.
Look, I've said that about five times already, and I would like him to stay at Peterborough because that's where he's getting minutes, you know, against men. But more realistically, as we know that Darren McAntony, the chairman, will be willing to sell him at the right price, so perhaps we will see him. I'm sure you'll see him playing for a Premier League reserve team near you for the next,
in the checker trade.
Yeah, in the next sort of 3 or 4 years, but hopefully not. And that is my very very quick scouting report on Leo da Silva Lopez.
And if you want, you know, anyone listening wants to hear a scout report from one of us using Instat, of any kind of Football League player, then do let us know and we'll be happy to oblige. And in future pods, you know, we'll give you a similarly detailed report.
Yeah, I'll work on my scouting. I'm sure it'll get better. But yeah, no, let us know because we have the... We have the wherewithal to do some sort of low-level scouting for you. So we'll do that. Just going to touch on Bury and Oxford United, two teams that I think there are some worries about. Now, from my point of view, I'm going to defer to you on Oxford. But with Bury, it is astonishing what's happening. They had such a good run, which led to Flitcroft winning Manager of the Month. And they've now... lost seven in a row, I believe, without a win in 11 in all competitions. They haven't kept a clean sheet in 18 games. Last night they lost 5-0 against Wimbledon. And this weekend they're playing against Wimbledon again away. So, I mean, we predicted a drop-off from Bury. We didn't predict this. Is this the type of thing that you think can only end in a managerial change? Is that the only way of turning this round?
We've spoken before about Flitcroft being very streaky, but this seems like worse than a bad streak. It's strange for a team who went on such a dominant run earlier on in the season to lose their way so completely. But yeah, I don't think he deserves to keep his job. I don't really see why you persist with him. He's had the job for a long time and hasn't really taken them anywhere. There doesn't seem to be any light at the end of the tunnel, and it's only getting worse. So... wouldn't it surprise me a bad result this coming weekend, and we could see the end of Flitcroft at Bury.
Well, I mean, Wimbledon will be going into that game knowing that they can do whatever they want against Bury, and it's up to Bury now to really show some support for their manager, I guess, in their performances. Less worrying, but still worrying, Oxford United, your Yellows. Just to let the listeners behind the curtain ever so slightly, on Saturday... you said to me from Bali that if you lost against Shrewsbury, then you would start worrying that you would admit that you're in trouble a little bit. I think you were probably 10 fruity cocktails to the wind at that point.
Just a few bintang.
But you know, that's when the truth comes out. So talk to me, George. The last month or two at Oxford, it's not been good. What is going wrong? And you know, you were pretty high on Yellows in pre-season, and it didn't seem irrational. So why aren't the preseason expectations being met?
I think that probably my attitude is pretty symbolic of the whole attitude around the club, and maybe that's the issue. I still wouldn't be in any way surprised to see us finishing in the playoffs, because the squad is definitely good enough. But I think the issue is that because you know, Appleton is a very positive manager, I think he's instilled a belief within the squad which has maybe crept into complacency. I think that generally the thought is that we are too good to go and be near that relegation fight. And maybe we aren't. I mean, the recruitment of the strikers has been poor. We just don't have anyone who can finish up top. Kane Hemmings hasn't looked the player that we wanted when he came in. Wes Thomas has in the past shown some ability, but can be just absolutely dreadful. Like really worryingly bad. And it's tough, you know, that game against Shrewsbury, we just didn't really turn up for the first half. And we've got Coventry at home on Saturday, which is a massive game.
Yeah.
Because that's followed up with Tuesday Gillingham and Saturday Scunthorpe away, which will obviously be so tough. So I think by next Wednesday, we'll have a better idea. You know, it's such a close league that if a couple of wins, which, you know, as a fan, I expect us to get 6 points in these two games. This is home to two teams that aren't particularly good. I know that Coventry are on a decent run, but you know they aren't two of the stronger teams in the league. 6 points and suddenly we'll be in the top half and it'll look rosy again. But having said that, with Scunthorpe looming on the horizon, anything kind of less than 4 points and we could really be staring down the barrel. Chris Maguire came out this week and said that we're not nasty enough, which could be true. We are, you know, it's a good group of footballers and not much experience in there. So it'll be interesting to see how Appleton reacts, because you know this is his reputation on the line as well. Whilst Oxford are kind of in the higher reaches of League One, then he's a young manager with massive potential. At the moment, if we're not, then it's his career that's looking a bit ropey again. So I'm not too nervous about. I mean, I won't be thinking about relegation for a long time, I can tell you that, especially when we're 6 points or 7 points off the playoffs.
Seven points it is at the moment. It, as you say, once you get past that big four, it's basically all still very, very tight, which is what we want after a third of the season. Obviously, you'd rather not be at the bottom end of that, but plenty to do. I wonder whether there's a sort of question of confidence, really, that this is a team that believed in itself so much last year, and even when things didn't go too well, that it never seems to be much of a problem. And as you say, these next two games are huge, and if you can see some confident, you know, attacking play, then it sounds a little bit like we're really just waiting for some goals to be scored by those two.
I think that's it. I think Hemmings has to start scoring. I mean, he hasn't really got the chances, to be fair to him. We've got creative players, but, you know, just looking at the table and seeing us level on points with Swindon, like, no disrespect for Swindon, but that game earlier in the season was you know, the gulf in quality was immense.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen us this season match or far, far outplay Bolton, Bradford, Peterborough. You know, these are teams in the top six now. It's a conundrum. It's a quandary. I think that we're not going to be talking about the bottom end of the table for too long with Oxford. But that is the kind of attitude that Appleton has to make sure it doesn't seep into the players. They've got to can't get complacent. They've got to realise that the wins have to start coming now, because it's not going to happen without some hard work.
Well, we have been accused before of you have been accused by a listener or two of sort of real bloody-mindedness when it comes to yellow. So we'll see. Clearly that has changed ever so slightly, but there's still optimism there. That's nice to hear. Glad to hear we're not jumping on the manager, you know, swearing at the players.
I don't think anyone is. I don't think you speak to any Oxford fan who'd want Appleton out.
Well, that's very refreshing. And we'll move on to League Two now, where we'll just touch on a couple of the main things. Only one or two, really. Got to give Plymouth some love because they do feel entitled to it, as we know, and it's justified. They've won 7 away games in a row. They've won 12 of their last 14. The other two were draws. They're 7 points clear at the top of League Two already. This, to me, is a team in the image of their manager, Derek Adams, who gritted teeth is sort of what I think when I think of him. And I think that's sort of played out in Plymouth's results, really. They've won a lot of their games by one goal, by a single goal. You know, tight games that they've just edged, just taken their chances, just ridden a little bit of luck, but sort of squeezed out results. And, as we know, that's all you need to do if you can do it on a game-by-game basis.
I'm not gonna lie, I've backed Plymouth pretty regularly this season, put my money where my mouth is, and it means that you can stay up to date with these games whilst they're going on, and you just always feel like they're gonna score. Like, even when they're drawing with kind of 20 minutes ago, you always think that they're gonna find that extra gear and get that winner, and normally they do. So
you've got, I mean, crazy things like on the weekend against Crewe, 1-0 down, conceded a penalty. Penalty was missed. Then long range shot hit the bar from Crewe. That was before they'd really done anything. So Plymouth somehow just grinding out the wins, and a very, very good League Two team. So congrats to them. Obviously, we've always banged on about it, but it's worth continuing to do so while he is still scoring/assisting basically at more than a goal a game, essentially, at this stage. Graham Kerry scored on the weekend, scored the winner, and continues to be absolutely brilliant. One unbeaten run that did come to an end was Carlisle's unbeaten start to the season. They were the last ones in the EFL to lose, and they lost to Newport County. Shock horror, Graham Wesley has made a bad team competitive.
No surprise there, is there, really? No. And they'll probably go from strength to strength as he turns them into these machines that, as he always does. Expect them all to kind of, their shoulders to grow in size, I thought, over the next few months, and they'll I'm sure be absolutely fine in terms of relegation battle, because that's what Westie does. He gets results.
I'm really intrigued because I don't feel like there's any way of knowing definitively. I'm really, really intrigued to just get inside clubs managed by Graham Wesley or Steve Evans at League Two level specifically, because they've both had, well, Westie's had difficult times a bit higher up, and just see, like, what are they doing?
I know. I agree.
Why is it that at a certain level there are these men who somehow can come in and just do a job that you know they're going to do. Not necessarily incredible, but you just know what they're going
to do. Warnock's one who does it, seems to do it every year with a different club. Yeah. I mean, it's very impressive.
What are they doing? Can anyone tell us? Please let us know. I sort of thought that Carlisle, for me anyway, I'm sure the fans were very disappointed, but I think it could be a good thing that they're doing their business, and I don't think you need the sort of bit of a media circus, isn't it, that comes with that sort of run.
I think it's
start of the season, it was mostly draws anyway, and as we've said before, maths, science tells you that, you know, it's better to win one and lose one than draw two anyway. So, I mean, you know,
it's
not
just up to Keith Carr to make sure that losing to bottom of the league and losing that streak doesn't, you know, doesn't hit their confidence, and they keep doing the good work they've been doing.
Yeah, prior to that, Danny Granger, the defender, I think he plays sort of left centre back in there, 3-5-2. He'd scored in six consecutive games, which is pretty remarkable. I think three or four were pens, but still not bad for a defender. No. Pretty impressive, really. We got a new manager, and he was the newest before Steve Evans was appointed. It's Marcus Bignett, who you might remember for being a sort of pretty standard Football League player. And now is a manager. Now, I don't know what your thoughts are. I know that you've got very sort of fairly slight but still fishy connections with Grimsby.
I have an affinity for the fish, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, have you got any idea about how this came about?
Not really. I was quite surprised. I've met some of the hierarchy at Grimsby and lovely people as well, but it's a very kind of innovative move. I wouldn't necessarily have pieced together. Seems to be literally the most popular man in football. No one has a bad word to say about him. Solihull fans and you know, people who are involved in the club describe him as the nicest man in football. There's a fantastic video, I think it was the day before he went to Grimsby, where he thanked the fans for their support in the away game at Yeovil. In the cup, you know, went on the fans bus and said how much it meant and how important it was to the players and how they've got to keep going. And it's a lovely club. It's a great family club. It looks like a good fit. He's obviously had great success with Solihull.
Just in case the listeners don't know, I did a lot of research into him. When he arrived at Solihull Moors, they had a first team and a reserve team, essentially. And he leaves 5 years later. They have something absurd like 30 different teams across. You know, they're now a proper community football club. And as far as I can tell from what people have said, he was literally the single driving force behind that. I'm sure he had plenty of help and backing, but genuinely the driving force behind that. That's an amazing thing for someone to do. They've got clubs all through the age groups now. Sorry, teams all through the age groups. They've got teams for people with various disabilities as well. I think that's probably why he's such a popular man. Previously, he did crazy work, really, for Birmingham ladies team while he was still a player. I think he started when he was 24 and he used to do that sort of on the side. So, you know, so far what he's done is astonishing. It's been very interesting from a point of view of a manager joining the Football League for the first time, because the start of his career has been so interesting. And the only other real point of interest for me was seeing that under him at Solihull Moors was Omar Bogle playing up front, as I think he was probably, can't have been more than 18, 19, and in three seasons he scored more than a goal every other game. Very good record. Obviously got a slightly bigger move, which Bignett said he just couldn't stand in his way, but now they're reunited and Bogle scored two on the weekend. Obviously missed the penalty right at the end as well, but hell of a start for Bogle and Bignett. although they didn't win, they look like, you know, it looks like Bogle, he's just like a runaway train at times. Those two goals he scored, he just took on the whole of the Barnet defence. So we'll keep an eye on Bignett and we hope that he does well. Otherwise, in League Two, there are just 6 points between 6th and 23rd. So Exeter City, second bottom, 6 points off 6th, which is obviously the third playoff place. That's pretty astonishing, even tighter than League One. Again, after a third of the season as well. It's amazing, really. And another little quirky thing that I saw, because this is very abnormal, in League Two, you are just as likely to win away from home as you are to win at home. Out of the matches this season, there have been 67 away wins and 68 home wins.
If that's the case, I'd recommend everyone just has a nice little multi on the away wins.
Yep, exactly. So there's a tip from NTT20. Look at away wins in League Two. Very strange. And I wish I could come up with some sort of reason for that, something really clever.
But we can't.
But we can't. We'll look into it for you. Just lastly, George, one of the things that came out today, aside from Steve Evans's appointment and first press conference, which was as entertaining as you can imagine, there was the news that the EFL are going to follow through with the fining of teams who didn't abide by the rules in the Checkatrade Trophy. We knew that for the teams that aren't the invited teams, the academy teams, under-23s, whatever you want to call them, normal teams, EFL teams, had a strict set of rules which said they weren't allowed to make more than basically six changes from their team from the latest league game. A lot of teams did make the changes. A lot of them made pretty persuasive arguments for making the changes, but they have been fined. Luton Town hardest hit with a £15,000 fine. Luton chief executive Gary Sweet basically released a statement saying that the EFL are effectively saying that promoting young talent is only acceptable if they're with EPP1 clubs, so the big clubs. And Nathan Jones also had a really passionate plea, essentially, saying, you know, we've got young players as well. And he thinks, and it looks to be true, that his young players are just as good as any other young players.
They've qualified. They beat a team in League One, and they beat a Premier League team.
Mm.
So, and a Premier League team including international players.
Yeah.
Like, it really annoys me. And this is what I was talking about earlier. What frustrates me so much is just that nothing's going to happen. There's no one who's accountable for this. There's no one who's going to come out and explain what's going on. It's a faceless... You know, the EFL is a faceless thing who are posting on Twitter. It surprised me, firstly, they made it public.
Yeah.
Which seems a weird thing to do because, you know, eventually we're going to find out, I'm sure, that Luton would have made the statement either way. And there's just a massive irony about the fact that the £15,000 fine is coming out of prize money.
Yeah.
Which just shows, you know, they've qualified. They're earning money through the performance of their young players. That is something that should be celebrated. And the fact that the whole point of this competition was to encourage youth team progression, and Luton are doing that, whereas you've got teams like Norwich who are basically playing the players who they aren't playing in the first team, like Nelson Oliveira plays every week.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is an absolute farce. It's been terribly mismanaged. It's still being terribly mismanaged. It shouldn't exist. It shouldn't happen. And I'm just looking forward to the farce being over, and hopefully if this happens again next year, I'd love to know how the clubs are going to react, because I'm sure that none will want to take part.
Yeah, well, if anyone listening hasn't been following the Checkatrade Trophy this season and the fines that have come from that, then you can do worse than heading to Twitter and checking out an account called Against League 3, a fairly sort of general account that campaigns against B teams, but the introduction of B teams in the EFL, and they have plenty to say about this. So head over there if you need further educating. And lastly, thank you very much for listening to another edition of the Not the Top 20 pod. It's great to have George back. It's great to be back together, and we will be together next week where we welcome back the Championship. We got some big games this week, specifically Brighton against Aston Villa on Friday night. Should be a cracker, and some of the first games for Paul Lambert, for Ian Holloway as well. We'll be back. Please, please continue to listen and recommend us to people, like-minded people. It's how we earn our keep. Well, it's not at all, because we do it for free. But it's great when we get recommended. We really appreciate it. And thank you very much for listening.